Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou, and welcome to Health Chat. There is some good news in the Ebola front. One country, Liberia, has been declared Ebola-free by the World Health Organization. The deadly virus has claimed over 11,000 lives across the region since last year, but as families and communities witnessed their loved ones lose their lives to Ebola disease, while others have been fortunate enough to survive this deadly virus, that continues to pose a challenge to the medical community and individuals as well. But for some survivors, the pain and aches continue through post-Ebola syndrome. What is post-Ebola syndrome? What it entails, what are some of the symptoms, and how is it being addressed? We will discuss this health aftermath of surviving Ebola on today's program. And joining us via phone from Geneva, Switzerland, is Dr. Margaret Harris. She is a spokesperson for Ebola at the WHO, World Health Organization. Dr. Harris, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be with you.
We're very happy you're joining us today. And let me remind our listeners that if you would like to join the conversation, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. And you can also email us your thoughts or questions, as always, at healthchat@voanews.com or post them on facebook.com/healthchat, VOA Health Chat. And we will start discussing the issue of post-Ebola syndrome in a moment with Dr. Harris. But first, as I mentioned earlier, Liberia was declared Ebola-free on Saturday after more than a year of battling the outbreak. Nevertheless, much remains to be done to keep the country free of the disease and to strengthen the healthcare system. Dr. Alex Gasasira is the World Health Organization country representative for Liberia. From Monrovia, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about the main objective now that Liberia has been declared Ebola-free.
The main objective, one, is to ensure that Liberia remains Ebola-free now that transmission has been stopped in the country, and two, to ensure that Liberia does not suffer any other outbreak of such a devastating nature again. So lessons being learned from this outbreak, strengthen the health system, the public health system and infrastructure in the country to ensure that any other disease or if Ebola were to come back to the region, it would be detected in a much more timely manner, an adequate and timely response processes set up so that the number of cases can be much, much reduced and we do not see such a devastating outbreak again.
So how do you keep Liberia Ebola-free?
In terms of ensuring that Liberia remains Ebola-free, as you do know, Ebola continues to be reported in Sierra Leone and Guinea. Both countries share borders with Liberia. There's a lot of cross-border population movements because of family, cultural, and economic reasons. And so the government of Liberia and its health partners, including the World Health Organization, are strengthening surveillance at the border areas so that if anybody comes from the borders who may have signs or symptoms that may suggest he or she may have Ebola, this person can be isolated, can be investigated, and indeed, if he or she has Ebola, can be confirmed within the shortest time possible and treated in a way that would prevent this infection from spreading to other people in the community. Similarly, people who are crossing from Liberia into the other countries are being given adequate information, what to do, how to protect themselves. At the borders, there's continued provision of water and soap and urging people to keep hygiene. Of course, even that is not only at the borders. Even though Liberia has been declared Ebola-free, every effort is being made to keep the communities and population aware that there's still risk of Ebola in the sub-region and to continue the good practices like hand washing, safe handling of bodies, that helped stop Ebola in Liberia.
And Dr. Harris, again, thank you for joining us. That was Dr. Alex Gasasira, your colleague from the WHO country representative for Liberia. Now, he spoke mainly initially about the main objective in post-Ebola, in a post-Ebola country like Liberia. Did you want to react to that or add anything to what he said?
Well, I just want to support exactly what Dr. Gasasira said. He's got it. He's presented the message exactly correctly. It's really, really important that Liberia remains vigilant. It's fantastic that they've achieved this milestone and they've done extraordinary work. Unless you've actually been in this country and seen what that people have faced, it's difficult to understand what an achievement getting to zero cases really, really is. But it's about staying at zero now. It's about being so vigilant that anybody who comes in with fever gets tested. And Liberia is showing us, we're seeing the results when we look at the data that comes from Liberia. We're seeing that they're testing anybody who fits the case definition or even has some of the elements of the case definition of Ebola. They're testing everybody, and all those tests have been negative. And it's not necessarily a bad thing if they find another case, because that means they are really, really have their eyes on everybody, and they're really looking for another health threat. And this is the level of vigilance you need, not just for Ebola, to be honest, for every disease that's going to cause a threat to the health of the population of Liberia. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to build on. We have to understand that it's really so important to understand that any disease that arises in Liberia or is in the population of Liberia needs to be identified and treated right away. We've got to stop this idea that it's in any way acceptable for any diseases that threat the health and the well-being of Liberians to continue. We have to make sure that Liberians and everybody else in all the other countries of Africa and the world mm-hmm. have the very best standards of health care.
But let's talk about the fact that there are neighboring countries that are still struggling with the virus. So as Liberia is really stepping up efforts to remain Ebola-free, what about the fact that if there is one person who is infected, even if it's not in the country, there is still a threat? What do they do mm-hmm. at this point? How do you maintain a rapport with the neighboring countries that are affected and still struggling to ensure that, you know, you protect your own country that has come out of it?
You're absolutely right to raise this point. Now, one of the really heartening things we've seen is that the three countries have got together and said, okay, this is not just about one country. You can't just say, okay, great, we finished. It's about we're all connected. We as humans are all connected. We've seen this with this Ebola epidemic. It's managed to spread to all sorts of countries. It's spread to the United States. So we all have to get together as human beings and understand that nature is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And now we have to be ready for what nature's going to inflict upon us. So indeed, in the other countries, what's going on is, first of all, we as WHO are putting a lot of our experts on the borders to work with the people within the country, the people within Liberia, the people within Sierra Leone, the people within Guinea, to ensure that should somebody with an infection cross into, say, Liberia, it's identified right away. Because the crucial thing with Ebola is you can control it if you identify it early. If you isolate people, if you identify all the people they've been in contact with, if you follow those people, you can stop it early. It's not a virus that's terribly clever at spreading itself. Mm-hmm. So if you get it to it early, you can stop it. But that's the crucial thing. And what we found is that finding it in countries that have got enormous geography, very, very diverse cultures. People within these countries come from many, many different cultures and have many, many different ideas about what's important in terms of health, what's important in terms of disease, what's important in terms of managing disease. These things are all very different, and we have to respect that and understand that. So we've had to do a lot of learning and have to do a lot of learning to respect people's ideas and find a way to work with those ideas to help people to protect their own health.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the issues that emerge throughout this crisis is the life of survivors, given how virulent this virus is. First of all, before we even talk about the post-Ebola syndrome, which I mentioned in my introduction, let's talk about mm-hmm. the main objective post-Ebola for a survivor. Your colleague talked about for a country. You just gave us an idea of the main objectives for the country as Liberia. But now, what about for an Ebola survivor? What will be the main objective?
You're absolutely right to focus on Ebola survivors. Now, we now have thousands and thousands of people who have survived this disease, which, of course, is great news. But it's not over. Mm-hmm. Initially, most of the knowledge we had about Ebola was that it was a disease that essentially made you sick for 7 days, and you either lived or you died. Well, this is not so. Mm-hmm. For a percentage of people, this disease continues, and this is something very, very important. Back in September, we, the WHO, recognized when we were working with a group of survivors in Kenema in eastern Sierra Leone, we had a wonderful young doctor, Maggie Nanyonga, from Uganda, who started to work for survivors, mostly really to support them because they were suffering enormous stigmatization mm-hmm. and suffering enormous psychosocial problems. So that was what she initially went there to try to understand and manage. But it soon became clear to Maggie that there was physical consequences of Ebola, and people were remaining sick, mm-hmm. and that for some people this was a chronic illness. So Maggie went to each survivor and asked them and looked at them, because she's a young doctor herself, and she assessed their symptoms. And she found that in this group, now this is not the case in every group, but in that particular group, she found that 50% of them had serious eye problems. And she understood that for someone that has recovered from something as horrific as Ebola, then having lost their vision meant that they were being hit twice. First of all, they had this terrible disease. Second of all, they were left with severe visual loss, so severe that for some they were blind. Mm-hmm. And so she alerted us in WA. She alerted me. I was actually working with her at the time, and other people within WHO, and said, this is something we have to deal with now. So we brought in the experts, and we have been following the survivors, and we now have an ongoing project mm-hmm. to look at how we can care for survivors. And we have found that eye problems are a serious problem. Some have also got serious hearing problems. Mm-hmm. Some have got problems with joint pains that haven't gone away or have started, say, a month after they've recovered, or they've recovered from what we call the acute phase. And some have got real problems walking because their muscles have been wasted during the acute phase. So there are certainly very serious after effects. And a lot of our work now is focusing on looking after people who survived Ebola and understanding what's going on. We now know a great deal more about this disease, but it is still tricking us. It's still providing us with mysteries and surprises. So we've pulled in all the best scientific minds mm-hmm. and we're working together to try to understand what is going on with Ebola and what are the best treatments, because people now have this chronic problem, this post-Ebola syndrome, that we need to do more to manage.
Okay. All right. And Dr. Harris, we are going to take a short break and we will continue our discussion. We also have questions coming in, and we will be right back. Don't go away.
It's a pleasure.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, we are discussing surviving Ebola. And our guest is Dr. Margaret Harris. She's a spokesperson of WHO's Ebola unit. Dr. Harris, thank you so much for joining us again. Let's talk.
We were
talking about some of the aftermath in terms of the health consequences on patients. Now, one of the things that I was wondering is Ebola has been discovered in 76 in the DRC, and then there have been some outbreaks, I believe, a little less than 30 outbreaks. Maybe we have like, this is the 27th, if I'm not mistaken. What have we observed with past survivors that, obviously, this outbreak is in West Africa, which did not necessarily happen to this extent, at least. What have we observed in terms of the survivors in the Central Africa region? Is it the type of strain that is causing these health repercussion, or is it something that was observed in the past in terms of the eye problem and all the other symptoms that you describe?
That's a very good question. Now, previous outbreaks, including the Kikwit outbreak you refer to, there were some reports of post-Ebola syndrome. So there were some reports of people having after effects. Unfortunately, these were not followed up. So we do not know what happened to the people who suffered those effects. We do not know if they recovered. We do not know if they then remained with these effects and spent the rest of their lives with them. Unfortunately, at that time, WHO was not hugely involved in those outbreaks. To an extent, we might have been involved in helping with the coordination. But until this really big outbreak, we weren't really involved strongly in what we call the clinical care. And the clinical care is the treatment of people. So traditionally, they were done by partners who were people who managed hospitals or who managed the care, different non-governmental institutions who are expert in care would have provided that. But because this outbreak was so huge, we became very much more involved in organising clinical care and bringing in experts who were involved in the clinical care. And for that reason, we brought in some of our own people and they began working with survivors. And that's when we realised that this was a serious and ongoing problem that we need to take to pay attention to and to devote some of our resources to, because it's bad enough to have suffered this really lethal, this terrible disease, which causes enormous physical pain and suffering while you're ill, and then to find that you have these ongoing secondary effects. And of course, as you know, the World Health Organization's mandate is to ensure that every human being has achieved the highest standard of health. So for us, it's extremely important that first of all, everybody who possibly can survive, but secondly, those who survive can survive with the very best standard of health. So this is a very important area of work for us now.
Okay. Now, Peter in Liberia has a question. He says, Can these health problems after Ebola be related to the treatment?
In the case of the people in Liberia, I think that's highly unlikely to be the case, because Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, because in most cases the standard treatment was intravenous fluids if you were lucky. For a lot of people it was simply oral rehydration, because especially when the epidemic was at its peak, our partners, Médecins Sans Frontières and others, found they were so overwhelmed that the only kind of treatment that was safe to provide was oral rehydration salt that was providing fluids. But the most effective treatment we know is intravenous rehydration. So again, this is simply what we call supportive therapy. Now, this works if you can balance the fluids correctly. You can get the person through the acute phase. So we think that the post-Ebola syndrome, and I honestly have to tell you, it's not clear. That's why we've got some of the best scientific minds working on this. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a combination. In some people, it seems that the virus itself is able to get into certain places in the body that are known as immune privilege sites. And they are places like the eyeball that the body itself has said, no, I'm not letting the immune system in there, because if the immune system can attack my eyes, then the immune system can make me blind, and the eyes are too important. Mm-hmm. We also have that the neurological system, that's the nerves and the brain, mm-hmm. they're also immune privileged. So because if you don't have your brain, nothing works, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to have parts of your body that are really protected. Another place is the testicles. Again, so that your immune system doesn't attack the sperm cells, which you need to reproduce. Mm. Interestingly, that doesn't seem to apply to the ovaries, but it does apply to the placenta. So when a woman is pregnant, again, the placenta and the amniotic fluid is protected from the woman's immune system so that the baby will be protected. Mm. But the downside of that is that we found that the Ebola virus can hide in there and can be protected from your own immune system. So your immune system's been very clever and has killed all your Ebola in the rest of the body, but it can hide in those places.
Wow, that's very, very scary. So then, when we say that it takes 21 days for the virus to disappear, or to declare someone Ebola-free, it's not entirely true, is it? I mean, if the virus can be surviving some areas.
Well, actually, we've put up some advice on our website saying that there are these rare instances where, so if you go onto our website and you look at declaring the end of an Ebola outbreak, mm-hmm. that's absolutely true. We have said there are what we call caveats, that there are these very rare instances where the Ebola virus could survive in a man's testicles, mm-hmm. could survive in a woman's placenta. So theoretically, if a woman was, say, pregnant 4 weeks, 5 weeks, managed to survive Ebola, which I tell you is just so rare. But if she did manage to survive Ebola, and this is really, really theoretical, and then she went on for another 9 months, at delivery, she could indeed be delivered of a baby with a placenta and amniotic fluid that contained Ebola virus. So what we're saying to Liberia is that anybody who is pregnant should be tested for Ebola, and that anybody, whenever you deliver a woman who's pregnant, you must take all the precautions, because even though it's rare, we do not want to see this kind of transmission occur. And we're also saying to all men who are survivors, please, you must practice safe sex. You must either have no sex. That would be the very best circumstance. But, of course, that's a very difficult thing to ask of people. Mm-hmm. So to please practice really safe sex. We've actually tested condoms, and we know that condoms, you know, the virus cannot pass through a condom. So if a man is practicing safe sex and making sure that after he disposes of the condom, he washes his hands thoroughly, and practices really good hygiene, that he should be able to ensure that he does not transmit the virus.
So then, so what I understand basically is that part of the body could act as reservoirs for the Ebola virus. Now, in this case, then, did you say that WHO has started to conduct some research in this instance to really address this issue of post-Ebola syndrome?
That's absolutely correct. So currently we have got research teams in the affected countries working with survivors and asking them if we can please test their body fluids. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is a very difficult thing to ask because the survivors have already gone through a great deal, and we're asking them to provide body fluids at certain intervals so we can track how long the virus lasts and what percentage of people actually has the virus. And I'm happy to report that people who survived the virus have been remarkably cooperative, because this is really a very difficult and sensitive area.
Mm-hmm. So when, let's talk, for example, about, in the case of the eye problem, right? Recently, there was a story about a doctor who survived and the virus literally was living in his eye and it changed his eye color. I mean, just the thought of this just makes me very, very, I don't know, it's just very, very bizarre.
It's very graphic, yes.
Yes, very, very graphic and terrible, really. But when there is a case like this, whether it's the eye that is hurting or joint pain or headaches, at this point, after the patient has been declared, has been said to have recovered, what is the course of treatment? Is it still antiviral? Is it painkiller? What is it?
Okay, so this is another thing we're looking at, exactly. So painkillers won't kill the virus, you're quite right. So we need to look at specific treatments that can stop this virus. Now, there is a tremendous amount of work going on, a lot of it coordinated, again, by WHO, to find specific treatments. There are various potential treatments. We haven't proven that they... we still don't have the definitive proof that they really work, but we're getting better and better results. So that is one area we're looking at, you know, providing survivors who do have these ongoing symptoms and who we find have got virus in various sites in their body. So, mm-hmm. for instance, a man who's got virus in semen, we're talking about then looking at what can we offer him as a treatment. We're looking also at vaccination. We're at the end of a study in Guinea where we're looking at one of the most promising vaccines. Now, if this vaccine proves to be effective, and we're quite excited about this vaccine, so we're talking about then offering at least the vaccination to the partners of men. Perhaps even you could offer the vaccination to the men themselves. So if the virus is hiding in immune protected place, you wouldn't expect that the vaccine works itself. So you're exactly right. We're now bringing all the best scientific minds together and saying, what can we do to make sure we protect this group of people from what they're suffering? It's really, really important we do our very best for all these people.
Are there cases where, I don't know if this has been perhaps identified or not, but are some people more predisposed at developing this post-Ebola syndrome because of perhaps some health issues they've had in the past versus others, given that the post-Ebola syndrome does not occur in every single patient?
That's an excellent question, and that's exactly one of the reasons. One of the reasons we're trying to follow a group of survivors and try to understand: are there characteristics that make somebody more susceptible? I mean, so far from the cases we have, they're what we call anecdotal. You know, a case here, a case there, a story here, a story there. So you need a large number of people to see a trend.
Okay.
You know. Do you then see 100 people and 80 of them have this specific feature?
Okay.
That gives you strong scientific evidence that something's going on.
Okay, Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris, we have to leave it there, unfortunately.
Okay.
We're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. It's really nice talking to you.
And that was Dr. Margaret Harris with the WHO. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.